This is the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We have not changed our music permanently, but just for today, you're hearing the sounds of music thanatologists James Excel and Elizabeth Markell here in the studio with their harps. Music thanatologists means they play music by the bedside of people approaching death. It's a growing field across the country. We've been talking about that in our first segment. We'll continue our talk about death and preparation for it with Elizabeth and James here in the background. Now we turn to Pastor Fred Gruey, who deals with death and the dying through his job as a hospice chaplain. He takes to the road as part of an Oregon Humanities project called Talking About Dying. It continues with a session in Cave Junction tomorrow night and one in Ashland November 8th. Fred Gruey, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, thank you, Jeffrey. It's always a delight and a surprise to walk through these doors. You never know what will happen.
But you are used to seeing the music thanatologists around. There was a real first name set of greetings here.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, tell us, just for in the general sense, about the folks who might not have heard you on here before, your own introduction to the field of working with people on the way to the end of life.
Well, the two significant stories, my mother died when she was 44, and I had just graduated from college and had moved home to care for her. So that was incredibly a profound experience on my life. And then in the early 90s, my dearest friend died of AIDS, and that was about a three-year journey. And as part of that, he moved in with my wife and I, and we helped just care for him at the end of his life. And so while both of those two experiences were really hard, I mean, they were two of the most formative experiences in shaping me as a human being. And I became aware that while something is hard doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be bad. And so I just realized that being with those two folks pulled the best out of me that I had experienced and taught me that I was more sensitive and kinder and more caring than I even knew I was. And so the opportunity came to study chaplaincy. And so I'm technically a chaplain, not a pastor. I tell the folks at the office there's a big difference between a pastor and a chaplain. A pastor has a congregation. I have a loony bin. And that doesn't go real well at the office.
I can imagine.
But they understand. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a chaplain. I work for Providence Hospice, thrilled to do so. Providence is a great organization. And on an average year, I will visit about 250 different folks that die. And so in the last 10 years, I've been with a lot more than 1,000 folks that have passed away. And it is it's the best job I've ever had. I mean, people look at, you know, I don't often, Jeffrey, say I'm a hospice chaplain when I'm out in public, because then people tilt their head and look at you with doe eyes like your brother Teresa, and I'm not. It is a great job. And because in my line of work, you really get to talk with people about the very important things of life. A lot of the nonsense is kicked out of folks by the time I get to meet them. Either by the disease or the drugs or a terminal diagnosis. And so you really get to sit with folks and talk about what's real. It's like time stands still. I know James and Elizabeth know this, playing the harp, sitting there. It's like time stands still and you're human, and the rawness of being human with all the existential questions, it's all right there. And I like, you know, I might be twisted, but I like being in that place.
Well, that's always the major question. I mean, we even hesitated to do a whole hour of topics dealing with death and dying, because you instantly get considered morbid just for spending that much time talking about death and dying in our culture. So, but you seem to be quite a cheerful person for somebody who spends that much time around dying people.
Well, you see me in little portholes of time.
But the rest of the time, you're awful.
But
right?
This goes to the program that the Oregon Humanities and Cambia Foundation have worked together. Oregon Humanities helps groups all around the state of Oregon just talk about different topics, and have made a great career of that. And Cambia Foundation is a leader in end-of-life care and palliative care, which is a big fancy word for just being kind to folks at the end. And this program is to help people just get together, and it's talking about dying, which is distinctive of talking about death. So the conversations, there's 38 of them around the state. There's a team of 8 facilitators chaplains. There's a couple of chaplains, Father Joel up at the manor, and myself. There's some counselors. I'm trying to think. I'm looking at my notes here. There's a gerontologist. Folks work with hospice and end-of-life care. So a team of eight facilitating these 38 conversations. And they really are conversations, Jeffrey. It's not a lecture. It's getting 20 to 30 Oregonians in a library sitting around talking about the process of dying. And we make it clear it's not about death, because if you open up the death door, then everybody's going to bring their
opinions
about what happens next. And look, I have strong opinions about what happens next, but I'm smart enough to know they're my opinions, because none of us have been there. So it's the process of dying is really the topic of the conversation. And the goal is not to talk anybody into or out of anything, but it's just to hear different perspectives. And in my studies of existential distress, which, oh boy, doesn't that sound like a, oh God, I've got existential distress, give me a pill. But in my studies, it's the talking about it really alleviates it. And so there's no answers to this stuff, but just being able to talk about it in sort of a safe place helps dial down the great fear and anxiety surrounded with all this stuff. And that's what we're just trying to do. And it really unearths how human we all are, you know.
We're talking about dying with Chaplain Fred Gruey, who works in hospice at Providence Medford Medical Center. And we also have in the studio with us still Elizabeth Markell and James XL, music thanatologists. You can join our discussion about dying on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We do have an email here from Corinne. No town given. She says, I am so grateful and want to thank James again for coming to my home when my mother passed to play for us. I know she heard it, and it was extremely nourishing for me to hear, and I was very moved. So I guess question then to you, James and Elizabeth, is this is not just for the dying person. It's for the family, too.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there have been studies that showed that families who have experienced a traumatic death or a difficult death in the hospital have PTSD, more likely, within 6 months. And we feel that if we can change their perspective in some respects, if we can give them opportunities to grieve, sometimes that's what the patient needs to be able to have some release and know that they can let go. In other words, it's for everybody.
You know, obviously you're a human being, so you get moved by situations where people are feeling strong emotions themselves, as they do at the bedside of a dying person. So how do you insulate yourself, Fred?
Oh, Jeffrey, that's a very profound question. And I think everybody does it their own way. I get alone. I pray and meditate quite a bit and read to nurture my own self. But I try, and one of the great things about being a hospice chaplain, I mean, this particularly in Southern Oregon, I'm in the car quite a bit traveling because I cover Jackson and Josephine counties. And so it gives me a chance to recharge and refuel in between visiting folks so that I don't bang, 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 one right after another, but that I have time to sort of recollect so that I have something to give when I walk into a room to meet, you know, to be with someone, that there's something in the tank to be able to offer. But I think, you know, that's one of the, how does any of us reach being in nature? I mean, there's a lot of ways, but it's a vital element of being, because you really are the instrument that you're giving to someone else. And so it's caring for your own soul, which we could do a whole program on what is the soul. I mean, there's a word we all
just
use.
Just one program?
Yeah, nobody, you know.
This week on the
what
Jefferson
is
Exchange.
That? Yeah. So now I do want to get this in, because there's four of these conversations talking about dying happening here in Southern Oregon in the next week and a half.
Okay, go ahead with the dates. So this is tomorrow in Cave Junction.
Tomorrow, Cave Junction at 6 o'clock, and these are at the public libraries. Then this coming Sunday at Ashland Library, I actually will be hosting the conversation at 2 p.m. And then on November 15th in Klamath Falls and in Medford, both at 2. So Medford, Klamath Falls on the 15th at 2 at the public libraries. Ashland this Sunday, 2 o'clock, and I'll be there. And then tomorrow night in Cave Junction.
And for the folks who are ranging a lot farther east, it's also November 18th in Lakeview and November 19th in Christmas Valley. So a chance to really, really get out there on the eastern end of things. Let's take some calls. We have Jim in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange and our conversation about dying.
Yes, one of the things that kind of fascinates me and then frustrates a little bit, people will make out a medical power of attorney to somebody, a family member, or somebody to care, but they don't really put in what they expect at the end, be it sudden or inevitable. I think that's kind of fascinating.
Okay, thanks for that. Appreciate it, Jim. You have some experience with this, Fred.
Yeah, in fact, this is a hot button of mine. I know because I've talked to Dr. John Forsyth, local real advocate for end of life, making your wishes known, one of the founders of the COHO group, the Choosing Options, Honoring Options. I believe the statistics are if you have an advanced directive, it's got about a 25% chance of being followed at the hospital. So 3 out of 4 are discarded. And if you have a pulsed form, that's the pink registry thing for the state of Oregon, the odds are much higher. Because here is the problem. You can have all the written, and the documents are important. I'm not saying they're not important. The documents are very important of making your wishes known. But if you don't have the conversation, which is why Oregon Humanities and Cambia is helping promote the conversations about dying, if you don't have that conversation with your family, your loved ones. If I don't have that conversation, and I could have, and I do have a pulse form. I mean, I practice what I preach, and advanced directive. If I were to stroke out or something, taken to the hospital, and I can't talk. If my son shows up and were to say, "You better do everything possible, or we're going to sue you," they throw my paperwork out the window. So the paperwork gets trumped by the fear of a lawsuit from a loved one. So that's why the conversation with your loved ones, and I've told my family, if Jesus comes to get me, don't you bring me back. I'll come back and haunt you if you do. So you make it clear what you want or what you don't want so that your family knows and they're not going against the grain of your wishes if you can't talk anymore.
And I've heard the recommendations with the pulse form that you have them like in an envelope on your refrigerator. So if you get picked up by an ambulance or something, people can find it.
Well, here's the beautiful thing. In Oregon, over the last few years, they have a registry. So when you're – and your pulse form can only be filled out by your primary care physician. So you can't do that on your own. You have to go to your doctor. Your doctor fills it out. It immediately gets sent to Portland where there is a registry. So if 911 is called to my home, the EMTs, while they're driving to my home, call the registry and they can find out. So whether they can find the pink form or not, yes, it should be on your refrigerator. But if it's not there, even in the registry, they can call and they'll know in less than a minute and a half whether you're on the registry or not and what your wishes are.
Let's take another call. Carter in Wolf Creek is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We have Chaplain Fred Gruey in the studio with our music thanatologist Elizabeth Markell and James XL.
Yes, in the early 1980s in San Francisco, there is a woman named Irene Smith who established an organization called Service Through Touch for particularly men at that time that were dying of HIV. And I consider this to be the more fundamental inner relationship with the dying than talking or music. And I wonder if your guests are working with Service Through Touch or some similar organizations here in Oregon. Over.
Elizabeth, you actually started with massage at the end of life, right?
Yeah. When I lived in Washington State, I worked for a couple hospices, and both those places had integrated programs of what they called complementary therapies that included, you know, there was music, massage. Some of them had acupuncture or other kinds of, you know, the energetic like Reiki. But when I did hospice massage, it was really beautiful and powerful. And the Ashland Hospice here does also have massage therapists, as I think maybe both the other hospices do as well.
Sure.
And, you know, when we actually went as music thanatologists, we often assess people's pulse. So that is a place where I get to touch in with the person and really connect with them and feel where they are on that level. And that's a part of how I think about the music I play as well.
It's fairly staggering, it seems like, Fred, the services available for people who are very close to the end of life.
It really is, Jeffrey. I have to say, it's in many ways, it is wonderful. I mean, yes, you get massage therapy, you get harpists, you get an incredibly wise and handsome man of God to show up. You get nurses
and
social.
You, right?
Yes, and then there's me. If he's not available, they call me. And then you get social worker. Yeah, and the whole goal, I want to say about the hospice thing, because people think hospice, they just give you morphine and kill you. That is not hospice. Hospice's goal is to help the patient enjoy as much of every day of life as possible with pain managed and being alert and awake. And the other thing about hospice that's really important is that it's for the whole family. It's, even though the patient receives the focus of medical care, the hospice goal is to provide support for the whole family. And there's even been studies done in the AMA, you know, the JAMA journal and all, that people that forego chemotherapy live four times those that really go after aggressive treatment, and that people that are on hospice care live as long or longer than people pursuing aggressive care. And so it's a whole different philosophy. It's about enjoying every day, every moment, as best you can, as long as you can. That's what hospice is about.
Fred Gruey is one of the facilitators in the Oregon Humanities Special Project, talking about dying, about what we think about and pay attention to as we approach death. It'll be tomorrow night at 6 at the Illinois Valley branch of the library in Cave Junction. It'll be in Ashland on Sunday, and then in Medford and Klamath Falls, same time, 2 p.m. on November the 15th. I want to thank Fred Gruey for joining us here, and I want to ask our music thanatologist if you want to take the next minute or so up to the Writer's Almanac and just play us
Absolutely.
Through. Thanks so much to James Markell and Elizabeth, James XL and Elizabeth Markell
do that.
For coming in.